The Land of Christmas. Werner and Anna. In the last house in the village, just where the great forest begins, lived a poor widow with her two children, Werner and Anna. The little that grew in her garden and on her small plot of land, the milk that her only goat gave, and the little money she earned through her work, were just enough to feed the little family. And the children were not allowed to celebrate either, but had to do whatever work they could. They did so willingly and gladly and considered this activity their pleasure, especially since it allowed them to roam the beautiful forest in all directions. In the spring, they collected the golden primroses and the blue anemones to sell in the city and later the lilies of the valley, which grew up with their sweet fragrance from the slopes of the baldy beech forest covered with withered leaves. Then there was also the woodruff with its pretty little trees, which had to be picked before the dainty white flowers could emerge, so that its power and flavor would remain in it. They made dainty borders from it, from which a sweet willow scent emanated even when they were already dried up, or they tied it into small bunches, which the noble townspeople put in wine, so that it would share in the fresh, dewy flavor of young spring. Later, the strawberries shimmered red from beneath the low-growing plants. And while the children of the wealthy parents ran into the forest and happily feasted at the lavishly laid summer table, at most picking a bear's litter to take back to their mother for the spring, Werner and Anna sat and diligently collected the good ones into the little pot and the bad ones into the little pot. But they were happy about it and in good spirits, picking one another and singing as they went. Later, however, the blueberries ripened on the mossy ground of the pine forest and stood together under the big trees like little dwarf forests, looking like pretty little plum trees with their dark fruits. These too they collected with blue fingers and cheerful dispositions in their pots. And then they went into the moor, where the blueberries grew, which have such dainty blossoms as little rosy porcelain bells and fruits as red as corals, and taste exceedingly good when preserved with applesauce. From old Lise, who drove into town every day with a dilapidated little trunk and a cart full of vegetables and the like and sold what she had collected for the children, they learned many things that city people love and are happy to buy for a few pennies. In the meantime, they looked for all sorts of dainty moss and duties, such as cover the ground in many different ways in dry pine forests and present themselves modestly with their peculiar and graceful forms. There they found some that were red and branchy like small corals, and others that resembled a cluster of small fir trees. From others grew the flowering organs like little trumpets or pointed merchant's bags, while still others stretched up small clubs, which were decorated with a button like red sealing wax. The city people liked to arrange such moss on a plate so that their eyes, when they were tired of wandering over the vast desert of walls and stone pillars, could rest on a piece of cheerful forest floor. After such industrious and joyful activities, autumn came and the time when the storms threw the dry wood from the trees and it was opportune to gather the winter fuel. The time when they sometimes looked forward to the beautiful winter evenings, when the fire roared in the warm stove and its reflection danced merrily on the floor and walls. When the baked apples were simmering in the oven and occasionally still emitting a soft, cheerful hiss, and the mother was telling a fairy tale to the pleasant purring of the spinning wheel. With such thoughts, they happily lugged their bundle of wood home day after day and gradually piled up a stately mountain next to the hut. Sometimes a bag of nuts also hung on the bundle. They occasionally fetched them from the large nut bush, where in some years so many grew that if you hit the bush with a stick, the overripe fruits would rain down like a brown rain. When they had brought enough of them, the nuts were put in a larger bag and hung in the chimney to be saved for Christmas. Christmas. That was a very special word, and the children's eyes lit up brighter at the sound of it. And yet this festive day brought them so little. A tiny little tree with a few lights and apples, self-picked nuts and two gingerbread men, underneath each of them a piece of warm winter clothing and, at best, a simple, cheap toy or a new slate. That was all. But from the few small lights, from the golden star at the top of the tree, a light emanated that spread its cozy glow throughout the year and whose reflection shone in the children's eyes every time the word Christmas was mentioned. When winter had come and they were sitting comfortably around the stove one evening and their mother had just told them a beautiful Christmas story, little Werner looked thoughtful for a long time and then suddenly asked, "Mother, where does Santa Claus live?" The mother answered, letting the fine thread slide through her fingers and the spinning wheel purring cheerfully. "Santa Claus lives behind the forest in the mountains. But no one knows the way to him. Whoever searches for him runs in vain, and the little birds in the trees hop from branch to branch and laugh at him. In the mountains, Santa Claus has his gardens, his halls, and his mines. There, his industrious companions work day and night on nothing but beautiful Christmas things. In the gardens grow silver and golden apples and nuts and the most magnificent marzipan fruits. And in the halls, the most beautiful toys in the world are stacked up by the thousands." Werner could not get this story out of his mind, and he thought it would be wonderful if he could succeed in discovering the way to this wonderland. Once he had reached the mountains and had wandered around there for a long time. Alone, he had found nothing but valleys and hills and trees, as everywhere else. The streams that ran there chattered and chattered like all streams. But they did not reveal their secret. The woodpeckers pecked and knocked there as they did elsewhere and flew away. And there was nothing special to be seen in the squirrels that were hurriedly climbing up the trees. If only someone could have told him how to find the way to the wonderful land of Christmas, he would have been willing to endure the adventure. But the people he asked about it laughed at him. And when he told his mother about his troubles, she laughed too and said that he should forget about it. What she had told him back then had been a fairy tale, like any other. But little Werner could not get the story out of his mind, although he never asked anyone about it again. He only spoke about it to little Anna from time to time while collecting wood, and they both painted beautiful dream pictures of the splendors of the wonderful land of Christmas. The little bird. One morning, shortly before Christmas, Werner took the kitchen ball over his shoulder and went into the forest alone. For the forest warden, who liked the boy, had once again allowed him to cut down a little fir tree for himself for Christmas Eve. The children had chosen these for a long time and after much deliberation and consideration had agreed that overall there was no more beautiful one to be found. It stood quite far out, all alone under the shelter of a single old beech tree and was so nicely and gracefully grown that it was a real joy. It was a beautiful, mild winter's day. The sun was shining from a clear sky and the forest floor was powdered with a little snow like caster sugar. Just the right day for the little forest birds that stay with us in the winter. In the still air you can hear the cheerful chirping everywhere and the roosters and goldcrests, which were roaming around in small flocks in the treetops and searching for the delicate twigs and branches of the trees. When Werner reached the old beech tree and the little fir tree, he sat down on a tree stump for a while to rest. All around it was as quiet as in a lonely church. Only a little stream flowed with a soft rippling in dark waters along its snow-covered banks, and from a distance came the sharp cry of an army. He fell back into his old daydreams about the wonderful land of Christmas, and the longing for these splendors took hold of him as he cried out to himself. Oh, if only someone could tell me the way to Christmas land. Then a louder sound went through the waves of the stream, like a gigantic laughter. A wood mouse peeped out of its hole in the trunk and giggled in a soft voice, and in the top of the old beech tree there was a swaying and undulating as if it were shaking its head at such folly. But in the little fir tree that stood before him, there was suddenly a soft and audible twittering. It was a blue tit, which was hopping from branch to branch, sometimes sitting on top, sometimes hanging down, and all the while letting out its call. I know, I know. What do you know? Asked Werner. The little bird threw itself backwards from a branch, darted playfully into the air, and then sat down again and called, I know the way. I know the way, quote. Then show me, said Werner quickly. Now the little bird began to chirp again, but the boy understood everything. You were good, he said. You protected my children, my 10 little children. I know the way, I'll show you, quick, quick. With that, the little creature flew to the next bush and on, and Werner followed it. At first he had only half understood the bird's words. But in the end it occurred to him that it had been a blue tit whose anxious cries had lured him to the old beech tree the previous spring. There he saw a titmouse sitting in the nest, about to pull out the little naked corn chicks to eat them, while the mother tried to defend her brood with her weak strength and pitiful cries. He quickly picked up a stone and threw it so successfully that the titmouse fell to the ground, struck dead. Now the little blue tit wanted to show its gratitude in its own way. It flew from bush to bush in front of him, following the course of the stream that came from the mountains. Soon the ground cleared and the stream babbled louder at Werner's feet. Then he reached a rising valley, which narrowed more and more as the sides became steeper. And finally, when the stream suddenly curved around a rocky outcrop, Werner saw a smooth stone wall rising high up and crowned with mighty fir trees. The little bird had suddenly disappeared, but its voice could be heard fading away from above in the distance. In a moment, in a moment. Werner sat down on a boulder and looked at the stone wall. It was smooth and without joints and covered in moss and colorful lichen. There was nothing else to see about it. So he sat and waited. The stream was constantly babbling to the side. From a crack in the field and from the top of a fir tree came the monotonous singing of the branches. Otherwise, no other sounds could be heard. Finally, he heard a soft fluttering above him and a hazelnut fell at his feet. Take it, cried the little bird. Bite it, bite it. Werner took the nut and looked at it. There was nothing special about it. Even when he shook it, it rattled as if something hard were locked inside. He cracked it open and found a delicate golden key inside. In the meantime, the little bird had flown to the stone wall, had clung to it with its delicate little feet and was pecking around in the lichen so vigorously that the pieces flew away. Finally he called out, "Here, here." Werner stepped forward and noticed a small keyhole framed in silver. The golden key went right in, and when Werner turned it, a strangely delicate clinking sound went through the stone wall and a heavy door opened all by itself, which fit so precisely into its frame that it had been sanded down. At the same time, a warm, bluish air streamed out of the opening and a scent of blown-out wax candles and sunken pine needles spread. "Oh, how does that smell like Christmas?" said little Werner. But the bird cried, "In, in, quick, quick." Scarcely had Werner, who was still feeling a little anxious, taken a few steps into the dark passage when he felt a draft behind him and suddenly it was completely dark, for the door had closed again without a sound. Now his courage sank a little, since any return was out of the question. But since he realized at the same time that trembling and talking would not help here, he stumbled resolutely on down the dark passage. The Land of Christmas. Soon it became brighter before him and then he stepped out into a strange region, the likes of which he had never seen before. It was warm there, but it was not the warmth of summer that greeted him, but the air that usually greets him in heated rooms, filled with all sorts of sweet fragrances. Nor was the sun shining from the sky, and yet an even brightness spread everywhere. He could not see much of the region itself, for behind him stood the high wall of fat through which he had entered, and all around him the view was obscured by many tall bushes on which the strangest fruits grew. As he walked in wonder and amazement among these plants, he soon found a broad avenue leading to a distant building. On both sides it was bordered by large apple trees on which grew golden and silver apples. Old gnome-like men with ice-gray beards and beautiful young children were busily engaged in picking them and gathering them into large baskets, many of which were already filled with their shimmering burdens. None of these people, however, paid any attention to little Werner, who, in apparent amazement, walked towards the building in the background, which now appeared to be a large castle with lofty towers and wasted domes and roofs. On the sides of the path lay many fields, divided into plots and planted with low plants. Here too, there was a bustling activity of gathering and harvesting. And in the individual fields, which stood out in different colors according to the type of plants they bore, there were graceful, colorful figures could be seen. Small two-wheeled carts drawn by golden, shaggy horses, bleeding diligently. As Werner approached the castle, he noticed that the smell of honey cake was spreading more and more. And when he looked more closely, he noticed that the entire castle was built of this sweet material. The substructure consisted of rough blocks and the walls of smooth panels, which were decorated with the most magnificent ornaments by pressing in almonds and candied lemon peel. And the most delicious reliefs of marzipan were embedded everywhere, the balustrades and galleries and balconies of icing sugar, the magnificent statues of chocolate standing in wasted niches and the shimmering colored windows made of transparent candy bars, for real. This was a castle so beautiful you could almost eat it. Attached to the elaborate entrance door was the button of a bell pull made of transparent sugar. Little Werner plucked up courage and pulled hard on it, but no bell sounded, Instead, he screamed inside so loudly, kikeriki, that the boys stepped back in fright. Then the cry was repeated like an echo several times, becoming more distant and quieter inside the building, and then it was quiet. Now the doors opened quietly, and in the opening appeared a strange personage, whom Werner, if he had not been alive and moving, would have taken for a large jumping jack. Positergold, said this funny person. Visitors. This is a strange occurrence. And with that, out of amazement or amusement, he clapped all his limbs together above his head a few times, so that it was horrible to watch. Then he asked, with his arms and legs constantly swinging back and forth, what do you want, my boy? Does Santa Claus live here? Asked little Werner. Yes, said the jumping jack, and Androden are at home, but very busy. Very busy. With that he invited the little boy to follow him, moving sideways in a strange manner with constant swinging movements, for the nature of his limbs did not allow him to do otherwise. He led the boy through an anteroom whose walls were made of marzipan and whose ceiling was supported by pillars of polished chocolate, to a door in front of which two gigantic nutcrackers in full uniforms and wearing enormous bear hats were standing guard, left him waiting there and went in. In the meantime, the nutcrackers looked at little Werner with big, painted eyes, then glanced at each other with indescribably wooden grins, and as they did so they chuckled as if they were laughing with their tongues. Now the jumping jack came out again, made a very beautiful bow from the side and said, "The gracious Lord requests your presence." At that the nutcrackers jerked together and made a whirl with their teeth that was quite extraordinary. When little Werner entered Santa Claus's room, he was very surprised, for he did not look at all like he had imagined him to be or like he had seen him painted in pictures. He did have a beautiful long white beard, as befits him. On his head, however, he wore a blue cap embroidered with gold, and otherwise he was dressed in a long dressing gown of yellow silk and sat in front of a large book, writing. But this dressing gown was covered with such wonderful embroidery that one could look at it like a picture book. On it were dolls and clowns and all the animals from Noah's Ark. Drums, pipes, violins, trumpets, squiggles and squiggles and sunbursts and stars. Santa Claus put down his pen and said, "How did you get here, boy?" Werner answered, "The little bird showed me the way. There hasn't been a visitor here for 100 years, Santa Claus said then. And this little rascal manages to do it. Well, that's why you should see everything. I don't have time, but my daughter will show you everything. Goldflame, come here, he called then. We have visitors. There was a rustling and sparkling in the next room and a beautiful little girl jumped into the room. She was wearing a little dress of tinsel and her whole body shimmered and sparkled. She wore a golden tinsel on her head and on the very top of it sat a shining little sparkle. Quote. Oh, that's pretty, said the girl, took little Werner by the hand and called, "Come with me, strange boy." And ran with him out the door. The Christmas Camp. They came to a large corridor and there was a long row of wooden rolling horses tied up. Grays, bays, chestnuts and blacks. Now choose one, said Goldflame. Werner chose a beautiful, varnished gray roan, which was beautifully decorated with spots like ivory on its hindquarters. And Gold Flame mounted a black horse as bright as a mirror. Quote, "Pooh!" she cried, and the little horses rolled off with them down the corridor, making little Werner's hair fly and wafting the flame on the girl's tinsel crown. When they reached the door at the end, she cried, "Holla!" Then it opened of its own accord and they rushed through into a large hall, in the middle of which they stopped. They climbed down from their little trunks, and Gold Flamchen said, "This hall is the Hall of Lead. Open wall cupboards with shelves upon shelves stretched up to the ceiling, and on them stood, packed in boxes, countless armies of hunts, sheepfolds, sleigh rides, menageries, and everything else made of lead. Little black-bearded dwarfs hurriedly climbed up and down the ladders and loaded the boxes onto carts, which they rolled out to load larger wagons outside. When they saw Werner and Gold Flamchen, they quickly rolled a couple of armchairs from Goldbrook over, and Gold Flamchen called out, "There's going to be a big parade right away." They sat down and had barely waited half a minute when there was a big commotion under one of the wardrobes, and deer and foxes burst out behind the barking pack of dogs and the hunters on horseback with the sound of their horns and the crack of their whips. Then suddenly there was a shimmer in the air and fine snow fell. When the ground was covered in white, a sleigh appeared with a merry jingling of bells and whizzed past. The front parts of the sleighs were shaped like swans, lions, tigers, and dragons. And in them sat gentlemen and ladies in beautiful furs. And as they passed, they threw little snowballs, the ladies at Werner and the gentlemen at Gold Flamchen. But if you look more closely, you could see that it was a sugar pea wrapped in paper. The snow melted again and with the lovely ringing of bells, shepherds and shepherdesses passed by with their flocks. The pretty gardeners with their fruit and flower borders, the gypsies, musicians, wirebinders, tightrope walkers, trick riders and other such traveling folk, and finally Mr. Hagenbeck from Hamburg with a caravan of African animals with giraffes, elephants, hippos, rhinoceroses, zebras and antelopes. The lions and panthers rode behind in cages on small wagons and roared profusely, as they probably thought they didn't have to put up with such things. After this merry parade, the two children remounted their little horses and rode on. It was incredible what little Werner got to see, the large doll's hall, which he didn't care much about and which he only wished Anna would see. The theater store, where, at Gold Flamchen's behest, 1,000 different plays were performed simultaneously in 1,000 theaters, which made for a pitiful spectacle. The construction kit store, the storehouse of musical instruments, the storehouse of wooden animals, the picture library, the paint box attic, the wax chamber, and such a sea of things, so that he was quite tired when they finally arrived at the great marzipan depot. Quote, "Now let's eat," said Gold Flamchen. Six little confectioners, boys in white jackets and aprons and broad white caps dragged a table over, set it, and filled it with the most delicious dishes at great speed. Little Werner had never had anything like it in front of his beak before. There were Leipzig larches of marzipan, filled with nut cream inside, quince sausages, ham with rosy melted sugar, pastries with strawberry jam, and countless varieties of sugared fruit. They drank pineapple lemonade covered in fine vanilla cream, and behind them stood the six little confectioners, ready to jump at any request and fetch it. For dessert, as Gold Flamchen particularly noticed, there was something very special, namely dry black bread and Berlin cow cheese. Such ordinary dishes were so rare and hard to come by in this country that they were considered the most exquisite delicacies. After the meal, the wooden horses were brought out again, and Gold Flamechin said, "Now we're off to the mines." They mounted and raced out of the next gate on the exquisite animals. The mines. They rode through fields where the most delicious fruits and vegetables grew, all consisting of marzipan, melted sugar, or chocolate filled with cream. They rode at breakneck speed through beautiful avenues of fruit trees towards the mountains. Some of it had white, shining slopes like chalk cliffs, others were dark and gloomy, as if it were made of basalt. But the summits of the almost black mountains were also gleaming white, as if covered in snow. Quote, "You think there's snow there?" said Gold Flamechin. "When it snows here, it's only snowing caster sugar." Finally, Werner saw a high, tiered, white, shining rock face before him, on which hundreds of workers were busily working on all floors, pounding and hammering. They rode up close and then dismounted. Quote, "This is the big sugar quarry," said Gold Flamechin. "All these rocks are made of the most beautiful white colonial sugar." The entrance to a cave was visible quite nearby. And as Werner and Gold Flamechin approached, some of the miners hurriedly ran up, lit torches, and shone a light on them. They walked deep into the mountain, the walls shimmered and sparkled in the reflection of the torchlight, and suddenly they emerged into a mighty cavity, the walls of which were thickly covered with gigantic crystals of transparent rock candy, which blazed and sparkled magnificently in the light of the torches. "The Great Rock Candy Cave," said Gold Flamechin. They walked through and came to a place where the mountain diggers were busily hammering and pounding, driving new tunnels into the mountain. "They are looking for sugar powder," said Gold Flamechin. "It grows in large nests scattered throughout this region. When they find any, they scoop it out with large spoons." Quote, suddenly, as they advanced further, the mountain changed in an instant. Instead of being white and shiny, it looked dull and dark brown and smelled of vanilla. "We're coming to the chocolate," said Gold Flamechin. There were many people busy here, and they had excavated large halls like in a salt mine, in which only a few pillars remained standing. The finest vanilla chocolate was only to be found inside the mountain, while the open cast mine outside only produced spiced chocolate. When they finally stepped out into the open again, Werner noticed a rushing stream that emerged from a gorge in the mountain and flowed into the valley, where it drove mills that crushed the chocolate blocks into bars. "Would you like a drink?" asked Gold Flamechin. "It tastes good, it's Alec." Little Werner had developed a mighty thirst from all the sweets he had enjoyed and seen. And from the stream rose such a fresh, tempting scent that he hastily seized the cup that a courteous miner handed him and drank it down in one gulp. But hardly had he taught him when the world began to move around him in a most strange way. He saw 2 little golden flames, 4 little golden flames, 100 little golden flames, which flickered and flashed before his eyes and finally merged into a luminous glow. And into this golden flood his consciousness swam and was gone. The end. The first sound that little Werner heard again was the chirping of a blue tit. He noticed with astonishment that he was sitting on the tree stump under the old beech tree, with the little fir tree in front of him. The blue tit chirped and hopped in the fir branches as before. But Werner no longer understood what it was saying, said, Then she flew up and disappeared in the branches of the beech trees. With horror, it now occurred to him that it must soon be evening and that his mother must have been waiting for him, full of fear. But when he looked at the position of the sun, he realized with astonishment that hardly a quarter of an hour could have passed since he had left this place. He could not explain this strange thing. However, as he was too eager to tell his mother and little Anna about his strange experiences, he quickly took down the fir tree and went home as fast as he could with his burden. When he had told everything here with shining eyes and flying haste, his mother was quite angry and said that he should not dare to fall asleep in the forest in such weather again. If it had only been a little colder, he might have died. Afterwards, however, she shook her head and wondered to herself where on earth the boy had dreamed all these strange things. But Anna ran after little Werner, who, crying because his mother did not believe him, had gone out, hurried after him and did not tire of questioning him. He had to describe Gold Flame and the doll's room in particular over and over again, so that he was completely comforted and told the story all over again. He had to tell it who knows how many times over the following days, and once they both went into the forest to look for the place where the entrance to the wonderful land had been. But they got as far as the spot where the little stream sprang from a marshy forest meadow. Nowhere did they find a place that even remotely matched Werner's description, so that the latter stood there before Anna, quite confused and ashamed, and did not know what was happening to him. And so Christmas Day arrived. For 2 days beforehand it had been mighty cold, so that the world looked quite Christmassy, as it should be. It had already become dark and the children sat expectantly in the dark room, whispering to one another and listening to their mother, who was rummaging around in the bright Christmas room and setting up the small, meager presents. Then suddenly from a distance it came closer and closer like the jingling of a sleigh, and in between a whip cracked merrily. Now it was very close and suddenly it stopped. You could hear the horses stamping in front of the house and only the bells could be heard softly jingling when the animals moved their heads. "Santa Claus, it's Santa Claus!" cried Erner. Then they heard the door open and a man's voice speak and suddenly their mother called out, "Children, come in. Your uncle is here." Werner and Anna ran into the room and saw a man in a large fur coat who was holding out both hands to them and calling, "Come here, dear children." Then he picked them up one by one, kissed them and said, "You shall come with me to the city and live with me in my big house. I will be your father and raise you to be capable people." Quote. Meanwhile, a huge coachman with a fur hat, a long white beard, and a coat with seven collars kept coming and going and carrying many large packages into the living room. When these were later opened, a great many beautiful things came out of them, so that there was a Christmas present giving such as had never been experienced in this house before. Later, when Werner and Anna went to bed, someone whispered to her mysteriously, "Do you know who the coachman was with the fur hat, the long white beard, and the big coat?" "It was Santa Claus. I recognized him again, and he winked at me." But how had the old rich uncle, who lived alone as a miser who shy away from people and had never bothered about his poor sister and her children, come to do such a good deed? He had told it himself later. The night after the day on which Werner had visited Santa Claus, the uncle had had a strange dream. A man with a blue velvet cap and a long white beard stood there, wrapped in a golden robe, suddenly appeared before him, looked at him penetratingly for a while with powerful blue eyes, and spoke slowly and emphatically. "Conrad Baradin, do you have a sister?" Then such a feeling of fear came over him that he was unable to answer. Then the apparition gradually disappeared, and only the eyes were still fixed threateningly on him. He had had this dream for 3 nights in succession. In the meantime, he was driven about in his desolate and dead house by an indescribable restlessness, and the deep, reproachful sound of these dream words kept ringing in his ear. Finally, on the morning after the third night, he ran into town and, to the great astonishment of all the people who knew of his former stinginess, bought the most magnificent things, ordered a sleigh, packed everything in it, and drove off without further ado to his poor sister. Little Werner had learned something valuable afterwards and became a famous and respected man. He told me this story himself.